Well, I'm eager to talk about what I'm going to talk about tonight. The title is called Significant Nobodies, and I don't know what you make out of that, but I have to start when I was in the seventh grade. Mrs. Lummis was my class teacher, and one day she announced, "We're going to do a class play for the whole school." Oh, I got so excited. I was so excited because I just knew that I was destined to be a star. I mean, there was no doubt about it. And so I kept telling, auditions are tomorrow. I know she's going to give me a main role in this play. And so we went and auditioned, and I was so excited and so confident. And then after the audition, she announced, and I didn't get a main role. Well, that was an insult. But adding insult to injury, I didn't get any role. And I'm telling you, I couldn't believe it. That was absolutely incredible. Me not get a role? I mean, no, it's true, I had never been in a play before, except in the fourth grade. I had a raccoon cap and something that looked like a buckskin jacket, and I walked through with a stick that was supposed to be a rifle. I thought I did a great job of playing Davy Crockett, but that was 3 years before. So anyway, I was really incredibly let down. Up to that point, I had held her very highly in my esteem. I had thought she was one of the greatest, most intelligent teachers I had ever had, but obviously I was wrong, because her judgment was so far off, at least in terms of judging acting talent. But that wasn't the worst. She actually gave a role to my good friend Don Walker. Now, I grew up with Don. He and I went to school together. We worshiped the same congregation. I would go home with him some Sundays. He'd come home with me some Sundays. I knew Don well, and he didn't have an ounce of talent anywhere in his body. And I knew that. And the fact that Mrs. Lummis couldn't see that was just unbelievable for someone who was supposedly so educated. Well, so Don got a role. Don Walker. I couldn't believe it. You know what I did? I went back recently to the old yearbook. And then that's a ways back. Photographed his picture out of the old annual. You ever seen a picture of Don Walker? Well, you couldn't forget him because this was his picture. That's right out of the yearbook. Biggest dork of all time. Well, but the lowest moment was yet to come. She didn't give me a main role. She didn't give me any role. And I was the last one left. She said, "Royce, I want you to pull the curtain." Are you kidding me? Pull the curtain? Does that take any talent? You just... And that's it. And nobody sees you do it. I was devastated. I'm still not over it, as you can tell. But finally the day came and the play was ready and the whole school was gathered in the auditorium and it was packed. But I was confident that Don was going to absolutely blow his little part. I mean, he didn't have much of a part. I've got to be honest about it. All he had to do was enter from stage right, walk to center stage, say one line. And when he came in, he had... carry a pipe wrench. Say one line and exit stage left. Now that's not hard, except for somebody as talentless as Don Walker. So I was waiting. I opened that curtain. I said, "Okay, Don, your colors are going to show today." Well, no doubt in my mind what was going to happen. So sure enough, the moment came and here comes Don. Strolling along center stage, carrying his pipe wrench. And by mistake, the wrench slipped out of his hand and clattered all over the stage. I just about lost it. I knew that was the moment. Well, what he did was he picked it up and ad-libbed some line. You know what happened? The entire audience rolled in the aisles with laughter at that line. It wasn't even in the play. He just made it up. And when the play was over, we all went back to our classroom, And Mrs. Lummis, bless her poor little heart, all she could talk about was how great Don Walker was, how great Don Walker was. She said he was the star of the show. I wanted to throw up. It was terrible. Some people have nightmares. I had Don Walker. But since then, I've really given a lot of thought. That's really a true story, except for a little exaggeration here and there. But I've thought a lot about Don Walker. I actually did see a picture of him recently on Facebook, and he looked a lot like Phil Robertson, if you know who Phil Robertson is. If you don't, that's okay. But the more I thought about Don Walker, the more I realized there are a number of Don Walkers in the Bible. And I was at first sort of taken aback by that. But then I became very, very impressed with the fact that there are some Don Walkers in the Bible. A nobody who enters, says something, does something, provides something, and then leaves. And you never hear from him again. A nobody who God uses to do something significant. And so a significant nobody. And the point is that there are a number of people that we are taught about that have very small roles in the Bible. And they come in, they do their thing, they leave. And though they had very, very small roles, especially compared to the stars that are there in those stories, what they did had a significant effect on other people or a significant impact on something that God was in the process of doing to carry out his will. And so I've since come to admire that kind of a person very greatly. So I want to look at some Don Walkers in the Bible. And I hope they serve as encouragement to every one of us here, as we'll try to emphasize as we go through. Now, before I go on from this point, I've got to say that I thought seriously about changing the entire format of this presentation. Because you're going to be tempted to think that's a little over the top. I do use a lot of graphics. I have for many years. And one of the reasons for that is I was telling somebody a long time ago, there was a preacher years ago who was known all over the country and in heavy demand for meeting work and that kind of thing, who specialized in short sermons. No, don't worry. I haven't imitated that part. But short sermons, 3 points, a poem, and that was it. But he did a fabulous job with that. And I was with him one time when somebody asked him, Robert, his name was Robert Jackson, some of you probably have heard him, said, Robert, why do you preach the way you do, the kind of lessons you do? And Robert said, well, I'll tell you, I'm up there in the pulpit and I see this 12-year-old sitting down here on the pew, and I look over here and I see a guy with a PhD. And what I do is I try to preach so the 12-year-old can understand it, and I just hope the PhD can. And while that's not a make-or-break kind of a thing, it's influenced me greatly. And so I use a lot of graphics, mainly because there often are a lot of children, and it helps to bring them into it and to pay attention to it. But even with that explanation, I started just to revamp this completely, but then I decided, nope, there's an awful lot of young folks here. I think they can pick it up pretty well. I just hope the adults can. So I'm going to present these Don Walkers in the format of some new movies that are ready to open in your area, and we're going to start with The Angry Leper with Elisha the prophet, the main star, and in a supporting role, Naaman the warrior from Syria, and introducing a newcomer, Gehazi. We know this story. So if your popcorn's ready, okay, that's supposed to be a joke. We'll go ahead. So the feature presentation, The Angry Leper. The two stars of this story are easy to identify. Naaman, captain of the Syrian army, and the great prophet Elisha. With a minor role, but with a lot of screen time, is Elisha serving Gehazi. But none of these three stars played the most critical role in bringing about this miracle. Travel with us now back to a Bible galaxy far, far away, and let's see what happened. Yeah, I told you, a little over the top. Well, we know the basic story, and we're going to read through this. I might skip some sentences here and there because we know the story. But Naaman was the commander of the Syrian army. Syria, Aram, same country. Great man in the eyes of his master, highly regarded. He was a valiant soldier, but he had leprosy. Now, bands from Aram had gone out and taken captive a young girl from Israel, and she served Naaman's wife. And she said to her mistress, "If only my master would see the prophet who is in Samaria, he would cure him of his leprosy." So you've got the slave girl captured out of Israel, offering this piece of advice to her, the mistress of the house. Okay. So Naaman went with his horses and chariots and stopped at the door of Elisha's house. Sent the messenger out, "Go wash 7 times in the Jordan, and that will cleanse your leprosy. Your flesh will be restored." But Naaman went away angry. He said, "I thought he would surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God, wave his hand over the spot and cure me. Are not the rivers back home cleaner than these here in Israel? Can I wash in them and be clean?" So he turned and went off in a rage. Okay, and we understand that. One reason he has had such a fit over this is because Naaman was a star. I mean, he was a VIP in his home country of Aram or Syria. And the king looked to him for many things. I mean, he really walked in high cotton. He was up there. He was a star. So he goes to the house of this other star, Elisha the prophet, thinking, well, we're a couple of stars, so big things are likely to happen. He's going to come out, there'll be a great ceremony, I'll be held in honor among these people, and maybe I'll even be cleansed. Well, that's not exactly the way it came down. Naaman's servants went to him and said, "My father, if the prophet had told you to do some great thing, would you not have done it? How much more when he just says, wash and be cleansed?" So here comes this nobody. We're not even told the name, right? It says Naaman's servants, but then apparently one of them acted as a spokesman for the rest of them, because then we get from the plural down to the singular pronoun, "my father." Why not do this simple thing? So he went and dipped, and his flesh was restored and became clean. Fascinating story. Two stars and a Don Walker. And that miracle happened because there were two complete unknowns who decided to speak to the star, Naaman. The little slave girl, we don't know her name, and then his servant, who spoke for the group of other servants. Two nobodies. And to me, that's fascinating, because this wouldn't have happened this way had it not been for them walking out, saying their line, and then they disappear forever in the story. So who is that that influenced Naaman to go to the star prophet? Who is that young girl? What's her name? Well, we don't know. When the star was running away from his remedy, who is it that came forward and said the one little line? Why don't you do this little thing? We don't know his name. Why did they do that? Well, the scriptures don't tell us the motivation, but obviously they had enough respect for the man that they were going to try to help. And that's probably about the best we can do with that part. What reward or honor did they receive? As far as we know, they didn't receive anything. Well, they did get those details put in this book, but I doubt they ever knew that. What do we learn from that story? Well, let's compare it to today's second feature. We're going to jump up a little bit. And the name of this one is called Enter in Triumph. Of course, Jesus is the star of this story, featuring the 12 disciples band and thousands of extras who happened to be on hand. As he approached Bethpage and Bethany, he sent two of his disciples saying, "Go to the village ahead of you, and as you enter it, you'll find a colt tied there, which no man has ever ridden. Untie it, bring it here, If anyone asks you, what are you doing? Tell them the Lord needs it. Okay, we know that story in Luke 19. And so they went. They brought it to Jesus, threw their cloaks on the colt and put Jesus on it, and he entered Jerusalem on that colt. And the people spread their cloaks, and when he came near the place where the slope goes down the Mount of Olives, the whole crowd of disciples began joyfully to praise God in loud voices, "Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord." That was quite an event. As he enters Jerusalem for the last week of his life, and we often refer to that as his triumphal entry into Jerusalem. So he entered Jerusalem for that final week, just like Zechariah the prophet had predicted in 520 BC. It's a precise fulfillment of that specific prophecy, where Zechariah said, "Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout, daughter of Jerusalem. See, your king comes to you, righteous and having salvation, gentle and riding on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey." 520 years before Christ. And here it's happening. So to fulfill the triumphal entry prophecy, Jesus sent two disciples. We have to have a colt, because Zechariah, specified that. So they go into the town. They find the colt. They start unloosing him. And somebody says, "Hey, what are you doing?" He said, "Well, the master needs it." And so we don't know exactly where they found it, except they found, I guess, the first colt they saw tied up. That's the one they started to bring. But who was the owner of that colt? Nobody knows. I know in Texas it used to be back, if you took somebody else's horse, that was a hanging offense. Of course, not everybody has that problem today. But whoever it was, why did he allow two strangers to take his colt away? Well, we know absolutely nothing of the background. And here's a guy, here's a Don Walker, a nobody, who suddenly is center stage, and he says, basically, "Why are you untying my colt?" Then, so far as we know, he's lost to history after that. But did he play a significant role in what happened in Jesus' triumphal entry? He provided the key prop, the one that Zechariah had specified at 520 BC. What an honor. But the point is, this insignificant man played a very significant role in fulfilling a 550-year-old prophecy. And yet, when you go to Jerusalem, and a number of you have been there, I hope a lot more of you get to go, you can walk all over Jerusalem and you won't find a single statue built to that man. How important was his small role in the dramatic entrance that Jesus made into Jerusalem? Well, it was key. What kind of recognition or thanks did he get? None that we know of. So what do we learn from that? Well, let's compare it to the next presentation. You're getting all kinds of movies tonight. And this one is called The Hungry Assassins. Sounds dramatic, doesn't it? Watch 40 terrorists ensnare themselves in their swear now, pay later desperate conspiracy of death. Do you remember that story? Starring Paul the Troublemaker, the Fraternity of Hunger, and a special appearance by the Roman Legion. Directed by Nephew DePaul. So let's go to Acts 23. The next morning, the Jews formed a conspiracy and bound themselves with an oath not to eat or drink until they had killed Paul. More than 40 men were involved in this plot. They went to the chief priests and elders and said, "We've taken this oath. We're not going to eat anything until we've killed this man. Now then, you and the Sanhedrin petition the commander to bring him before you on the pretext of wanting more accurate information about his case, and we're ready to kill him before he gets here." Ooh, what a dastardly plot. But unbeknownst to them, the son of Paul's sister heard of this plot. He doesn't even get the distinction of shortening that to Paul's nephew. He heard it. He went into the barracks and he told his uncle. Then Paul called one of the centurions and said, take this young man to the commander. And he did, and he informed the commander. And the centurion said, Paul, the prisoner, sent for me and asked me to bring this young man because he has something to tell you. Okay, and then, of course, the Roman legion protected Paul, and his life was saved from the assassination plot. So Paul's the star, and the star is in danger. A plot to murder him. A group of 40 men in the conspiracy looks really bad until we learn that there was a Don Walker nearby who overheard the plot. And Don Walker goes into his uncle, tells him about it, takes the information to the authorities, problem solved. What a turn of events for those 40 men. And I've always wondered if they remained true to their vow. I hope they did. But it's a very intense drama. Or at least could be billed that way. But now, who learned of the conspiracy? What was his name? Not given. And how important was he to the saving of Paul's life? Why, he was the key. He played the most significant role, even though it was tiny. Paul, Uncle Paul, I got to tell you what I just heard about. And then he basically disappears. He exits stage left, and we don't know anything more about him. So who's the hero? Well, it's not Paul. The star is not the hero. It's not the centurion who used 470 soldiers to protect Paul against the conspiracy. It was an insignificant person with a role so small his name isn't even given. He's a nobody. He's a Don Walker. He runs into center stage, tells his uncle, he disappears for the rest of history. But what recognition or thanks did he get? None that we know of. And so what do we learn from that story? It sounds exactly like the other ones we've looked at. But let's look at another one. Coming later this summer, I think here to Gettysburg, The Last Supper. The cast, Jesus and his 12 disciples. The script written in Mark chapter 14, particularly in verse 13. And we have some underlings here. A man with a jug of water, a couple of disciples, and a house. Key prop. On the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, it was customary to sacrifice the Passover lamb. Jesus' disciples asked us, where are we supposed to prepare the Passover? So he sent two disciples to go into the city, and a man carrying a jar of water will meet you. Follow him. Say to the owner of the house, the teacher asked, where's my guest room that I may eat this Passover with my disciples? He'll show you a large upper room, furnished, ready, and do your thing there. And so they did. It was his last night in that upper room with his disciples, and he had to do some really important things that last night. Some things that are outstanding. He had to eat the Passover with the full recognition that he himself was going to become the Passover lamb for real. He had to establish the Lord's Supper, which we still celebrate 2,000 years later. He had to wash the feet of his disciples. He had to identify Judas as his traitor. He had to lead the disciples out to the garden to pray and then go to his mock trials and his torture and his crucifixion. A lot of things had to happen that night. But first, he sent two disciples to find the place. So a lot of big names here. Who led them to the upper room? Who was the man carrying the jar of water? Don't know. Was he important to the story? Yeah. How important was the small role of that man to the rest of the story in chapter 14? Or what about the other guy? They come to the house and says, where's the master's room? He says, oh, well, right upstairs. Who was that guy? Nobody knows. But the point is obvious. Jesus and the 12 were the stars of this story. But a nameless man carrying a jug of water, was used to find the room at the house of another nameless man where Jesus could do all of those great things in that yellow box up there. And we remember all of those significant things that he did that night. And we remember what was about to happen after that night was over. But we don't often think about the two guys who set it all up. The water jug guy and the upper room guy. So important. Two Don Walkers. But do we ever hear of either one of them again? No. What kind of recognition or thanks did either one of them receive? Not any. So what did we learn from that? There are a lot of these stories scattered throughout Scripture. But one more, a special sneak preview that contains a lot of people. Now, if you go to Hebrews 11, these are the stars. These are the guys who have their names listed. And what we like to call the Great Faith Hall of Fame, or something like that. And these guys are either listed or they are so openly identified by the descriptions, we know who they are. But then following that, we have a whole host of unnamed heroes. These were people who made heroic choices, but we have no idea who they were specifically. They were common people with no face, no name, no applause, and no escape from their situation. And the writer of Hebrews tells us a few things about them. And I would describe it as a series of scary stories of sacrifice, suffering, brutal torture, and ultimately death to a great number of Don Walkers. Well, how did they do what they did? He talks about the people who lived in caves, who dressed in goat skins, who were constantly on the run trying to save their lives and the lives of their families, some who were beaten, stoned to death, killed by the sword, sawn in half, burned to death, but who made the choice in all of that not to deny Christ. Significant, heroic nobodies. How did they do what they did? Why did they do it? Well, the why is easily identifiable. That's the measure of the faith they put in Jesus Christ and the strength of the hope they had through him. The nobodies of Hebrews 11. What more can I say? I don't have time to tell about, and they list several of the stars, how and all the great things that they did. And then down about the middle of the page, women received back their dead, raised to life again. Others were tortured and refused to be released so that they might gain a better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging. Others chained and put in prison, stoned, sawed in two, put to death by the sword. They went about in sheepskins, goatskins, destitute, persecuted, mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. And every one of them, a Don Walker, a nobody, in terms of fame, but significant in what they did. They wandered in deserts, mountains, caves, holes in the ground, trying to survive. So many people, so many hard, difficult choices, so many incredible heroes, so many actors with small roles of whom we know nothing, beyond the brief description in Hebrews 11 of what they suffered. They were actors with small roles, no names given, but God used them to teach a great lesson about normal people, everyday people, not stars kind of people, to teach a great lesson about how those kind of people made extraordinary choices in order to serve the Lord. No fame, no statues, no memorials. But who were they? What monument was built? What special days do we have on our calendar to celebrate them? We don't. Why did they make those extreme decisions? Because they loved God. And they loved the Lord Jesus. And nothing was more important to them than that. How could they do what they did? I mean, you're talking about the most extreme choices a human being could ever be asked to make. Well, the simple answer is they did it by faith. But beneath that are the horrific emotions involved in knowing what was coming when they said, no, we will not deny Jesus Christ. So what do we learn from that? There's probably nobody in this room that will ever become a star spiritually. If we have a role, it probably is a small one. Nobodies who enter the scene, perhaps to set up the action, like the slave girl who is mistress to Naaman's wife, or we enter the scene perhaps to provide a prop that helps the plot or that helps the action, like the guy with the upper room, the guy with the colt, or they provide a place where things can happen and then they just walk off stage left and that's it. If we have a role in the great work of God, that's probably the kind of role that we're going to have, a small role. 100 years from now, we won't be famous. Our names won't be remembered. There'll be no plaques or monuments to us. And by that time, our legacy will have been long since determined. And when I think about that, I can't help but pray that I get a chance to walk to center stage, say some line, provide some prop, and then even if I have to exit, if it provided some kind of significant help to a person, if it helped in some way with the action of what God is doing in this world, what more could we really ask for than to have even a small role in that great drama? And though we are not stars and not likely to become stars, we can have a tremendous impact on the lives of other people. We are insignificant actors, but the small things we can do in service to God and in service to other people may be highly significant in the lives of those people. Nameless nobodies on the stage of this world simply trying to scratch out our pleasant, simple tune in the work of heaven. And I'll close with this story. Hope and I were freshmen at Florida College. I think it was the spring of 67, something like that. And we were worshiping with a little church over in Brandon, and it's significantly grown since then, but there was a family over there by the name of Miller, and we got close to the Miller family. And occasionally they would invite us over after church or something like that, but I think it was a Saturday. Brother Miller told us he was going to have a barbecue, and would we come? And of course we said yes. And I could not wait. And so they had several kids, but we drove up in their driveway over in Brandon, and their littlest daughter, she was probably 9 or 10 maybe, I can't remember for sure, but no older than that. She was out in the driveway by the edge of the house waiting for the two of us. And so we drove up, and I could smell the chicken. He was barbecuing it out in his backyard. And I said, oh man, I can't wait to get inside. Let's get to this. But there was this pestery little girl in the way. She came running up to me holding a little Dixie cup with her hand over the top. She said, oh, Mr. Royce, I have to show you, and Miss Hope, I have to show you this. And so she took her hand off, and there was a baby bird that had fallen out of a nest that was in a tree there in their yard. And she said, I've just been waiting to show you this. Well, I didn't want to see a baby bird in a Dixie cup. I could smell the chicken. But my mama had taught me, you know, not to mistreat little kids. So I kneeled down and said something. I have no idea what. And as soon as I could, we got up and went in the house. I mean, that's why we were there. And then I completely forgot about that girl and about that bird. And then many years later, I think it was April of 1990. That's a long time later. 23 years. Hope and I moved to join the faculty at Florida College. And in the spring of my first year, I was asked to go hold a meeting at that church. So I was glad to do that. And so I was over there, and it was one of these Sunday through Friday meetings. And on Thursday night, they had big glass doors at the entranceway, and I was standing there and looked at my watch, and it was 29 after. And so I was telling myself, well, I guess I better get up there. And I just happened to glance at the doors that were to my left, and here comes this tall, red-headed woman running up the sidewalk. And she ran through the doors, ran all the way across the lobby, and gave me a big bear hug. And of course, I said, what is going on? You know? But she said, you probably don't remember me, but my name is so-and-so Miller. And I remember a long time ago, you and Hope came to my house. And I showed you a little bird that fell out of a tree. And you were so kind to me. I'll get this out. She said, ever since then, I've always wanted to grow up and be just like Royce and Hope. Can you imagine that? Coming from the senseless thing that I did? I had no memory of it until she reminded me. Now, oh yeah, that chicken. But how in the world could something as small as what I did, with no thought about it having any import to anybody, being that significant in the life of a 9 or 10 year old girl? And I say that to emphasize the fact that there are so many things we do if we just pay attention to people that we probably will never know the impact, or that there was an impact, unless you get really lucky and years later someone just happens to tell you. But there was no way that could be planned. And so the point to us, I think, is if we want to live a life of service, we really have to tune in to everything. Always behave in a way that's righteous. Always behave in a way that's considerate, that's courteous. And it wasn't like I had done something great in her life. I just said some inane thing about this bird in a Dixie cup and walked away. But for her, it was an entirely different matter. How many things could we have done if we'd just taken 5 seconds, 10 seconds, to play with a small child, to let him or her know they're important to us? I remember as a kid, my heroes were preachers. But I was really bashful. I was really shy. But every time a visiting preacher would come to town, I would find a way to walk and stand right beside him, right up against his leg. And I'd look up at him. And almost always they'd step away just a little bit. But I admired those men. I looked up to them. I didn't ever tell them that. And I would sit and I would listen as long as I could. One time I was sitting on the front seat and I did fall asleep and fell out on the floor. That was a little embarrassing. But I think the influence those men had on me, without ever having any idea they were having an impact on me, is why about the age of 10 or 11, as I mentioned previously, all I ever really wanted to do was to preach. We just don't know the impact, so let's pay attention. We may be somebody's Don Walker, someone's Donna Walker, and we may, whatever we do, we walk in, we say or we do something, we walk away, and bam, they're changed. They're impacted. Don't ever underestimate the value of paying attention to people, particularly the younger ones who tend to get just overlooked by a lot of us who are so busy. And let's hope that God can use even us to be a Don Walker in his kingdom. As servants of God, all of us can be significant nobodies if we choose to leave ourselves open to God's guidance through his providence. We can impact a lot of lives, even without knowing it. Thank you so much for your attention. If there's anyone here tonight who's ready to obey the Lord, we invite you, during the singing of this song, to come to the front, express your wish to obey Jesus Christ and become a Christian tonight, and we invite you to do that as we stand and sing, please.